Welcome to the pod bay door.
Hello out there in the verse. This is the pod bay door. Please join us every Tuesday for informed discussions on new and upcoming movies, games, and tech. And if you love Las Vegas, stay tuned, because as Vegas insiders, we can give you a unique perspective on its history, provide insider information, and reveal the unknown secrets of our town, Vegas. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. We're glad you're with us. And hey, if you get the chance, subscribe to us and give us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Also, check in with us on our YouTube channel at the Pod Bay Door Podcast.
I don't care if the sun don't shine, I do my drinking in the evening time when I'm in Las Vegas.
Hello to you. This is the PodBayDoor.com. You can catch us on the PodBayDoor.com or check with us on any one of your favorite podcasting apps, including Podbean, iTunes, and SoundCloud. You can also check with our newest blog and enhanced download area at thepodbaydoor.wordpress.com, or check our .com and click on that big W and you go right there. Coming up on this episode, living in Las Vegas, listener questions from a panel who has lived here seemingly a very long time. We're going to talk about the hospitality industry, the gaming industry, the club industry, and a couple of interesting Area 52 topics at the very end. This is Jamie, and joining me today is John and Julia. How you doing, guys?
Hello.
Hello.
John and Julia have both been on the panel before within their separate disciplines. John as a linguist and a teacher, and Julia as an author. But today they are here primarily as my friends, but also they were with me through thick and thin in working within the Las Vegas industries. In fact, I think Julia, you've been the longest, right? You were before John and I were in the industry. You were working.
Yep, I started at the Sands in 94.
Okay, all right.
Sands to Hard Rock. I did a little bit at the Stardust as an intern. And then I did the Rio, the Venetian, the Wynn. Wow. And then I said to hell with it.
Wow.
That's
yeah.
it.
Wow.
Enough's enough.
Enough's enough. Enough's enough. But they are both going to help me with listener questions today. I gathered up all the questions that we have. We're going to move away from superheroes and talk about our favorite place, Las Vegas, today. So all these questions are going to be involving Las Vegas. And I think between the three of us, we're going to have some good, interesting answers for you. So here we go. And keep those comments and show suggestions coming in, positive, negative, whatever you want to say. Check in with us also on the blog. John and I have, I'm going to try to get Julia to maybe write something for us. John and I both write articles regarding what we've talked about on the pod, Bay Door. And comment on those as well. But our first question, Vegas Jam 36, what is it like to live in Las Vegas? Well, I have to say, in my opinion, it's one of the most unique places to live. I've always told individuals that ask me this, you have to learn to live here. It's akin to New York. We pretend to be a lot of cities. But mainly as far as the aggressiveness and the general energy, it's kind of New York. Would you guys agree? Yes?
Kind of New York. Well,
I mean, Julia's been to New York as well.
My sister lives in New York.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have a car. And, you know, she takes the ferry to work every day, walks. So in that regard, it's not like it. But I don't know. I guess for me, you're right. You have to learn to live here. When I first moved here, I did the thing that I think most people think residents do, which is, you know, go crazy at the casinos and drink and party. And I, in my youth, I dated a high roller for a year. So that was kind of a whirlwind. And now I have learned to live in Las Vegas, and I never go to the Strip anymore. I'm living a normal life. So,
how about you, John? What feeling do you get?
Well, I know before I moved here, I knew a guy who did live here for a long time, and he says, "Do you like to gamble?" I said, "No." He says, "That's good, because if you do, stay as far away from this place as you can get,
right?
Because it will wear you down." So, the fact that the things that people do when they do come here, whether they game, you know, it's a tourist town. I grew up in San Francisco; that was a tourist town. I lived in Monterey, which is a tourist town. So I've always kind of lived in tourist towns. And yeah, Julia's right. You just don't do the things that the tourists do, which is, you know, I go to this strip only when I have to. Yeah. There are, of course, neighborhood casinos. Yeah, I go in there. I go to the movie theater or something. But it's just, you know, the casino is just a road, you know, it's just a obstacle on the way to the theater.
Right. You know, there's that old joke, you know, that people ask the question, do we live on the strip? I've actually had the question, you know, from different individuals. Not, of course. However, Julia just reminded me that, you know, for a lengthy period of time, she did live on the strip. She was at the Sands Hotel, and one of the coolest hotels out there, like she said. But living in Las Vegas, you're basically 20 minutes away from anything. I mean, we're a very compact city. You know, even a township called Summerlin here, which nobody likes to go out to, is not that far. But the Strip is a very small place, so it does pervade everything that we do. I mean, it's holidays are different. Working on holidays is different. They're really, I can't say that there's any, if you're in the industry, there's no weekends per se. Every day is the same. And of course, there's the specter of gambling, you know, and potentially having trouble. I've never had that trouble. Every nickel is painful to me. So now, do you guys gamble at all anymore? Do you like holiday visitors? Do you gamble with family that comes in?
No, I never gamble. Whenever I put a 20 in, I just think of what I had to do to get that 20, and I just can't do it. Sometimes right. I'll do mega bucks just right. for the hell of it, but no, I don't gamble. How about you?
Nope, don't. Not at all. Just walk right by it.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, you know, one of the unique things in Las Vegas that we have, and it's a holiday tradition. In fact, we just passed it. Hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving holiday. My family comes in, and they want to do one thing and one thing only all day, every day during the Thanksgiving holiday. Bingo.
Oh, boy.
Now, do you guys... Bingo in Las Vegas is... Now with all the Indian casinos, people really kind of have an idea exactly what bingo is in a casino environment. But bingo here in Las Vegas is truly something to experience. It's as slow as you think it is. It is an hour. It's an hour of just sitting there looking at it. And nowadays they have computer terminals that you don't do anything. You don't dob anymore. You can choose to do the dauber with the pink and the green and the blue, but you don't have to. But it's a sea of the elderly, yes. And oxygen tanks and free donuts and free diet sodas and actually, it's a kick. Have you guys been?
The last time I went, there were only daubers. That was it. So
wow,
I've never seen the new electronic ones, but. It's fun. I had fun. Yeah. But it was a lot of smoking.
Yeah.
A lot of elderly people, including my grandmother. She would escape. She told us all that she didn't smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would go to bingo behind my grandfather's back.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. Now they sort of half-assed try to separate smoking and non-smoking, but it's one big room. So they try that. But the terminals now, they're called teddies, I think. And they're look like the size of a tablet, and everything is a wireless connection to the bingo caller and the ball section. And you buy they're called bingo cards as they are normally, but you buy them and they load them into your little computer, and you sit down, you put in your code. And it logs you in, and you play. For example, my family, it was like $25. You pay $25, that loads it up with a whole bunch of cards. In our case, we chose Rainbow. which are different levels of winning. And then the only thing is that then you sit there. You literally don't do anything. You sit there, and which is good and bad. You sit there and don't do anything, and you're bored. But then if you were dobbing, you could miss what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like there are still people that have four or five cards and they're dobbing and everything. But this one will let you know. It lets you know when you're one away, and then it plays a "We're in the Money" song when you win. So, yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
No, it's fun.
It's fun.
We go to the South Point, which is not the best house in town, but it's very much a locals place, but it's hysterical.
Yeah.
But almost all of the local places, you know, you go in, there's always somebody with an oxygen tank. And if anything wants to turn you off to that, getting into it, is just seeing that there's always somebody there with an oxygen tank. They look mummified.
Yes.
Sitting there in the chair, and you realize, wow, you know, that person's probably only like 65, but they look 80 or 90.
Right.
And it's just that environment. Environment. They go there all the time.
Well, do you guys remember people would wet themselves?
Yes.
At the Venetian. Mm-hmm. They would be sitting there so long, they would literally
have an accident.
And still sit there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In
oh,
it.
Yeah.
And still
absolutely.
Keep playing. They don't want to give up the machine.
No, mm-hmm. They're obsessed.
And they would do that. They would sit there with, like John said, with the oxygen tanks while smoking. They would actually be smoking with the oxygen tank connected to them.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so safe.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And the dealer friends that I have and everybody that I know, I mean, they talk about people sitting there too long, wetting themselves, going underneath the table, you know, going to the side of the table.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
and,
yeah,
and all the local it's places, terrible. you go to Green Valley Ranch, and they've got all these, Sunset Station, and they got all the posters of people, I won $1,000, and it shows them holding the money up. And you look at them, and there's these women with dyed hair and guys with bad teeth, and you look at them and say, oh, at what price did that $1,000?
Yeah.
And how much did you have to, how much did you lose to win that $1,000?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now, we're talking about all the bad stuff, and of course it happens, and it contributes to the sort of seedy nature that Las Vegas has always dealt with, but she deals with it just fine. But there are good parts about it, too. You know, having relatives in Phoenix, I know that a town like that rolls up the streets at 9 o'clock. So there's, you know, you go there and there's nothing to, the stores are closed, grocery stores are closed, gas stations are closed, you know, everything is just rolls up and you pretty much got to wait till the next day. Las Vegas is great about that. I mean, we are truly a 24-hour town. Our Walmart is 24 hours.
Yep.
But the good things about it are there's so much to do. Gambling is a little tiny bit of what there is to do, and it's strangely getting smaller. We're going to talk about the millennial influence a little bit later. And Las Vegas gaming is having a tremendous problem trying to remarket itself towards the new generations. But now, do you guys? What's the last show you went to?
Blue Man Group for me, just a month ago.
Blue Man Group.
I took my mother. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
At
Luxor.
Is it okay? Luxor.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a strip show, right? Not like the not like a concert.
Not a strip club, John.
I knew that.
We'll talk about that later, John.
Not a metal concert.
Not a metal concert. Okay.
A Las Vegas production.
I guess it was La Rev at the Wing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay.
What'd you think of that?
It was pretty good.
Yeah,
it was good. I mean, it had one of those, you know, we get those local discounts now and then. They run, you know, two for $99 or
Cirque du Soleil, La Rev, yes.
It was the same. It was the same producer.
Okay,
I don't know if it was an official Cirque du Soleil, but I think that was the last one.
Last one I went to was Ka at the MGM.
All right. Okay,
fantastic. I mean, the hydraulic system that they used and the whole stage production was amazing. The show was, you know, like most Cirque du Soleil performances, you come away. Once the visuals leave you, you're like, it's okay. And that seems to be the reaction to most Cirque du Soleil. Mystère still being the most popular, I think. Yeah. People love that. But Ka's also the one, you know, kind of infamous where the little acrobat mistimed the large thing and fell, and then she was unfortunately killed.
Yeah,
but MGM, Julia and I in the pre-show were talking about our favorite hotels. She was listening to the podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast.
Yeah. I never listened.
And she was mentioning that her favorite place is the Sands because of its old school nature. I mean, it's rat packed to the core, and it was such a fantastic place. I mentioned that my least favorite was MGM, because MGM to me, like I told Julia, is like a giant barn with slot machines. It's just, it's huge, you know, and the Venetian, though, where we worked, is deceptively huge. You know, we dealt with so many people that, especially, I mentioned, you know, where their room keys went bad, and they had to come down, and they would first yell at us, and then, you know, we would send them to the front desk to deal with that. But, John, what's your least favorite? As a consumer, not as a worker. Consumer.
Well, you know, the MGM might be up there as well, just because you're right of the size. And if you don't know where you're going, it can be frustrating.
Right.
It can be big. So I would put that one near the top.
Okay, the top. Good.
And I think the MGM, I agree. But I feel like, I know you said on a previous podcast that Steve Wynn is kind of credited for bringing the corporate environment.
Yes.
But MGM, for me, ruined it. They have, so what do they own now? New York.
Yeah.
Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo. Do they own Paris?
No, Paris is Harris Caesars.
Caesars. I just feel like when they came in, like I feel like Steve Wynn still had that.
Mandalay Bay too, do they own that?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I feel like Steve Wynn, yeah, he did, but he also had, he brought an element of class. I still think he expected, you know.
Right.
I just feel like MGM, it's like people are just herded around. It's like the herds.
Yeah, MGM is still powerful. I mean, Kirk Kerkorian, who has now passed away, was the person that sort of ushered that in with his battle with Steve Wynn.
Yep.
I think Kerkorian actually ultimately won because of Steve's eye affliction. He just couldn't keep in the game. But MGM Grand. And,
the Bellagio, too.
MGM Grand, Mandalay Bay, Bellagio. And so on, and even the small ones, they're still the largest, I think. Harris Caesars is snapping them up, you know, the little ones as we speak, probably. But what is, for you guys, again, you know, Vegas Jam 36, what's it like to live here? Is it different than, I always use the reference of Connecticut, is it different than living in Connecticut? My answer is an emphatic yes. But what's different for you guys? What was the thing that you had to learn to live in Las Vegas? Or did you? Mm. Is it just another city with a weird, you know, 2 mile strip? Or is it someplace where people they need to be instructed how to live here?
Well, John, you've lived in many countries.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I think it stands out to me is that Las Vegas exploded in terms of growth, probably in the last 20 years. So it's a very, and it was master planned.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about Summerlin and where I live in Henderson. The streets tend to be, compared to other places where I live, they're wider. There's, you know, they have a lot of trees, a lot of parks, which make it really nice for day-to-day living. It does have that modern suburban feel. Now there isn't a lot of history then to those aspects. You can find the older places when you drive out there. You see, wow, these places are really old. You know, right. The single story houses. I think it's interesting that so many of the houses that they do build still have like a formal dining room, and there really is, I don't think, a sense of family here. Almost everybody I know moved here from somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
So it's not like they've been here a really long time. So they don't really have those family gatherings like you might expect if,
right.
Expect where people are from. I know, like, my neighbors are from Ohio, so, you know, they usually go back to Ohio or they have people come out here, but generally speaking, you know, they're on their own.
Right. Now, now we've all worked in the industry, Julia, like we said, being the longest. Now, Julia, when you worked in, you started at what age?
So I started at the Sands. I was a freshman at UNLV, so I must have been probably just turned 18.
Yeah.
I was in the buffet, and I actually lived, my father relocated here when I was much younger than that, from Tampa, to accept a position at the Sands, and he lived in the casino for a year.
Wow.
So I would come and visit often, and we actually lived at the Sands Hotel in a penthouse, so I had the unique perspective of actually living inside a casino. And I don't know, it was great. It definitely takes a certain person to be able to do that. My father never gambled, never drank. Yeah. Like he was not, he would never succumb to the vices, but I did when I came out here for a little bit.
Well, now a freshman at UNLV, running yep. Rebels. They won last night, yes?
Oh, yeah.
Great job. They're yep. strong this year.
Yes.
I think that's probably the largest problem. Adults, you know, without the proclivity to you know, ruin their life with gambling, can usually deal with it. I think it's the college students. Because we have a large college here. It's a sponsored collegiate town, and just like Julia said, you know, when you get here, it's a party town. You know, I mean, there's money to lose and naked chicks to see and alcohol to drink, and you put them all together and you end up spending all your book money.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, moving on, Creek Values said, "Is the cost of living high in Las Vegas?" It is and it isn't. I would consider this. I mentioned $100 gallon of milk, and I've referenced this before. And then our lovely grocery stores, Vaughn's, Smith's, Albertsons, all of them, they have a little pod of slot machines. And there's always a 400-year-old lady there working there that's, you know, that's smoking as well. But you can go for a bottle of milk or a gallon of milk and end up losing $100. That's what that means. So that's a very unique part of Vegas, also in the airport, so that we've mentioned as well. But a couple statistics I found were very interesting. We're 119th in the world out of 340 for cost of living. So low as far as the world is concerned. We're 51st out of 101 in North America. So Canada obviously is representing pretty heavily. And 44th out of 89 in the United States of America.
So right about in the middle.
Right in the middle.
Yeah.
Now, living here, back to the milk. I have a milk problem, John. Mm. Back to the milk. We have two dairies, and I don't know why I'm spending $3.50 a gallon of milk. Now, we've all talked about we're getting rid of milk, all of us, I think, you know, kind of the dairy is out. But I don't know. Is the cost of living high? Do you guys feel... You know, Julia has experience in the mortgage industry, and we're all homeowners, right?
Yeah.
Here on the panel, not comparatively. I mean, we're right next to California, and that's crushingly expensive.
Oh, it's terrible! And whenever I have friends come here from New Jersey, where I'm from, yeah. they walk in my house and they're just wide-eyed. They right. can't even believe I live there because they've purchased a home with half the square footage
yeah.
and double the price. Right.
Yeah.
So. It's, you know, we're pretty lucky. Whenever I travel, you know, I love to travel and all that, but mm-hmm. I do love to come home. I do like living here. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do too. It's become a hub for me. You don't have to, yeah. you can go to LA and not have to be there. You can
yep.
go to New York and not have to be there. We have no state taxes. That's taken care of by the gaming industry. So there's a lot of pluses to be here. And obviously from those numbers, we're right in the middle. I was very surprised
yep.
by that. You know, there are a few things that are expensive. Our car insurance is the highest in the country. And thanks to young ladies like Julia. No, we're high because I looked this up. We're high because of the number of accidents per vehicle, and women are higher than men for accidents. I don't know.
Yeah, the driving here isn't the most pleasant. And so
no.
when I lived here and I had to work at the Venetian, I hated the commute I had
know.
To make. And it didn't matter. I thought, well, I'll work the night shift. We work, mm-hmm. you know, 4 to midnight. And midnight, no one's going to be on the road. No, everybody else is getting off of work, too. And because there's no alcohol law, per se, they never close the bars.
Right.
There's always a somebody drunk driving.
Always.
It doesn't matter. It could be 10 o'clock in the morning. It could be 10 o'clock at night. There's just
right.
going to be somebody loaded. So that's the fact that I can work from home. My office is in San Francisco. Now, my colleagues, seeing what they pay for rent, and for they get, you know, half the size of what I have for like 2 to 3 times the price.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, this is great. I get the best of, you know, I wouldn't trade that.
Yeah.
No.
Now, one thing I saw on the news, and it's not on the pre-show, guys, but one thing I saw that was very interesting, that when my relatives are here, they asked me if this is a sanctuary city. I looked it up, and it's actually it has been requested that we be a sanctuary city, but unfortunately, I think it's going to the sanctuary city. The general rule is that you have to cooperate and provide all data and information to the federal authorities, and that's kind of a huge problem. But the larger issue, which is why I don't think we're going to be a sanctuary city, is we are also a target city. They feel that you can't have both. You can't be on the list for ISIS and their wrath and be a sanctuary city as well. So I, when I was looking up the cost of living, that actually popped up. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that because in my travels, Rome is a global sanctuary city, mm-hmm. and it feels as such. It's kind of scary out there. So I don't know. Now, do you guys miss in your last foray into the hotel industry? Do you miss it? Do you miss working at the Venetian with me and John?
Honestly, parts of me miss it. Yeah. I know that's a weird thing to say. Here's what I don't miss: the customers, yeah. which is stupid to say because that's the whole reason we were there.
Sure.
But working with the public is a difficult thing to do. I'm sure there are many people listening in other industries who would agree. But I do. I did enjoy just the feeling of, being there, driving into work, kind of working in not a desk job. And mm-hmm. now I have a desk job. I'm leaned over a computer for 11 hours a day. And, right. I'm there at 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And I don't know. Back then, it just felt like life was more fun.
Yeah.
But we did struggle with the consumer.
Yeah.
We did.
That's probably what brought us closer together.
Too. Oh, I'm
just
sure.
The fact that we, even with people outside our department, yeah. was just that we all had to deal with this. Yeah. And people... So it's so funny to me looking at these, allegations in the news about people, their misconduct. I thought, well, we dealt with it all the time. These weren't necessarily famous people. The whole, what happens here stays here kind of gave them carte blanche to, okay, hey, I can go there and be an asshole. And I just hope, I hope these people aren't like this when they go home.
Yeah.
Are they an asshole full time? Or is it just, a part-time asshole?
All time.
And, and then it's just like, oh, we got to deal with them. And the next one comes up. Are you the person I complain to? Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. Am I the person who cares? No.
Yeah.
No.
There's nothing I can do about it. There's right. absolutely nothing I can do about it. But go ahead if it makes you feel better.
Right.
Tell me about the toenail you found under the bed.
Well,
lots of toenails.
Lots of toenails.
I got a toenail thing.
Did you?
Yeah, I got a toenail thing. I got I talked about a couple of the awful things. I got the bloody pillow.
Got the bloody pillow. I've had several condoms found in strange places.
Yeah.
But what was even worse, it seemed to me, was that not only, it was bad enough that the guests or the customers treated us, like riffraff, but so did the hotel. They had the cameras on us. They weren't really watching the guests. They weren't afraid that they were going to steal anything.
Yeah.
They were afraid we were going to steal something. Yeah. And then, I got interrogated by that asshole from security that time.
Yes.
He calls me in and he gives me this ringer. Where were you on Monday? And I think, what do you mean? Today's Friday. Hey, Monday. Okay. Yeah. I know where. And he had me go over my whole day from when I woke up at noon because I worked a night shift. And then I came here and I think, where the hell is he going with this?
I think I know what you're talking
about. Yeah. And all of a sudden he gets up and then you're at the desk and then he says, did you look at this porn site? And I looked at it and I remembered what had happened is your boyfriend at the time, his name was, I think, Mike.
Yeah.
Yes. He had called and said, hey, check out this site. And it was like an innocuous name. It was like, Bob's Vacation or something. And back in those days, before you went into a porn site, there was a splash screen, right?
Yeah.
You're about to enter a pornographic. And you said to me, he goes, oh, Mike gave me the address of a porn site. So I turned over and I looked at the screen and I saw the splash screen and you just closed out of it.
Well, yeah.
They had it in security. They had a record of that URL or they had a record of that, of the address. So they came down and, of course, they assumed it was me that looked at it. And that's why they were saying, well, we have it on. Yes. But I wasn't going to cough you up. And I thought, and I just said, no, I don't know anything about that. Well, and what he said was, looking at the porn site, you won't be fired for that. But if you lie that you didn't look at it, you will be. So I see. I said, no, I didn't look at the porn site.
Well, now I had a similar situation, which actually almost, I left you guys almost way earlier, is a guy came up and... we had 12 some odd weeks of training, which is nowhere near enough, best time of my life as far as my professional career. But after that, you know, we were told the customer is always right. You make sure you take care of them. Go above and beyond. All the tag phrases of the day. Well, okay, we had that drilled into our head. Fine. Well, this guy came up and he wanted a dancer, a visit to his room by someone who would take their clothes off. And okay, so I opened up the phone book and flipped it to that particular section, which it's there in the yellow pages when they still had yellow pages, and I gave it to the guy, and that was the end of it. Well, the next thing I know, I got suspended. They came and got me and this and that, and from apparently what happened was the guy that he chose poorly. For all you Indiana Jones fans out there, he chose one. The dancer went up there. He wanted more. Apparently, he got more, and she rolled him and took all his money.
Yep.
And so on and so forth. So he came down and wanted the hotel to compensate him. Well, if it was man-to-man dealing with that's never going to happen. You're an idiot.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was the corporate environment. So I get hauled in front of this goofy tribunal, have no idea what's going on. I had to deal with the same guy that you dealt with, this little squidgy security expert who came to find out that a lot like the eyes, he'd done time, and that's why he was the security expert, because he knows, you know, how to do all the bad things. Well, you know, I'm sitting there and I still have no idea what's going on. And we had some people that the panel will know the names. We had Nicole and Lola and that weird Brazilian chick, that Lisa.
Yep.
So I'm sitting there and they're saying, this is what happened. And I said, well, it wasn't me. And then they started describing the situation, and I was like, well, yes, that was me, but it was also the yellow pages. It's his problem. So, but at, a long story short, what John was talking about, we had no support.
No.
You know, I was immediately raked across the coals, and I was inches away from leaving. I don't know if you guys, do you guys remember this?
I remember that. Yeah. I remember waiting for you to come out of there. It was like you were coming out of surgery.
Yeah.
And then there was a day where they had to think about it. I had to go back in and talk to these people, and of course they found in my favor because it was just nonsense. But that happens a lot, especially now. You know, I won't bring up the current atmosphere, but I'm sure there are so many more little private meetings and tribunals. But that's the bad part about working in Las Vegas to me, and I'm sure for my panel mates here. You have no support.
Now, do you remember what they used to call it when you got suspended? They called it a career decision
day.
Career
decision day. Yes.
Yeah, and I got one of those because I had the bank, right? I mean, we sold the show tickets, right? Yeah. So I was responsible for the money that day. And we were $100 short, and we eventually found it, but I had to report we were $100 short. Yeah. And then anyhow, Nicole came to me and goes, gee, I'm really sorry, but you know, the hotel rules are, if it's anything more than $99, it's a career decision day. Yeah. Oh, geez, really? So if I would have put a dollar of my own money in there, it would have been okay. But the thing was, is that she goes, yes, you're going to have to take Saturday off. I said, well, had I asked for Saturday off, you never would have given it to me. So maybe I need to lose and then find $100 more often. So I sat home and drank beer.
Yeah.
And having my career decision date, like, do I really want to work here? No.
Yes, that's my decision.
That's my decision.
Well, and the Venetian also was, they jumped both feet into the group dynamic situation, same as the career decision day, the euphemistic ways of saying that you're in trouble. Well, because they didn't want the lawsuits, the litigious society that we live in, they didn't want the lawsuits. So, and they were all afraid to go one-on-one, you know, which I'm sure would make my dad just roll over in heaven. They were afraid to fire people. So if you, do you guys remember the point system?
I do.
And I actually got, talked to the group about the point system, and I'm a relatively irreverent person, and later on after the meeting discussing the point system, I said, well, how many points do I get if I win? And I got a point for saying that.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yes.
I don't remember how points were allocated. It was being late?
Late.
But what else?
Well, it was having any sort of negative interaction with the guests that would, I'm going to use a term, escalate.
Oh, an escalation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We didn't use that back then, though. Escalation came around in within the last 5 years.
No, it was a guest challenge.
Yeah, a guest challenge, yeah. And what else was it? It was being late. Oh my gosh, there was a laundry list of things. It was just nonsense because they were afraid to fire you. Because they you know, if you fired Julia, you fired me because I'm a woman. You know, they fired John, you fired him because he's old.
He was old.
Yeah. Well, it's worse these days. I'll tell you that. I'm a manager. You know, and it's worse.
John, we think John stole $100. Fire him.
Yeah.
You know, well, it was actually Julia paying for the porn site.
Yeah.
You know. That's right. Well, so you know what happened then? So I just said, no, because, well, we have it on video. Well, I know you have it on video. So good, fine, go look at the video.
Yeah.
Nobody looked at a porn site. So I finally got out of that grilling, and I went up to you. I said, you're going to go in next, and this is what they're going to talk about.
Yeah.
And Julia told me, you walked in there and just told the guy, said, oh, yeah, I was the one who looked at it. And I didn't look at anything. And then the guy was like, oh, okay. And that was the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's if people, one of the many questions come in about, you know, are we actually under cameras at all times? Yes, you are.
Oh, yes.
The only place you're not, and there's probably secret ones that we didn't know about, is the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Any bathrooms. Bathrooms in rooms, bathrooms in common areas. No bathrooms. But everywhere else, you are under constant scrutiny. And the eyes or security surveillance, they are absolutely watching. And the Venetian didn't really have catwalks, like, for example, the Horseshoe. They had trained individuals that were both IT and trained in surveillance. But, it's absolutely true that they have surveillance people for gaming areas that have backgrounds in cheating and stealing.
Mm-hmm.
They're great guys. They know exactly what they're doing. They're very helpful for the casino gaming area. But we were absolutely, they were at our desk, all of our desks, there were the minimum of three cameras mm-hmm. on us.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even know how wide the ones for the front desk. So yes, you're all, now the world is on camera right now, but yeah, we were. Now, this one, we're going to lean heavily on Julia on this one. I think this is, what is that?
Skin MD West. Oh, no. Same.
Oh, stuck in Midwest.
Oh, good.
Stuck in the Midwest.
All right.
Okay. Haha. Well, stuck in Midwest. Sorry.
Skin MD.
Are the clubs as good as they look on TV? And my notes are getting in, bottle service, VIB host, and music. Are they as good as they look on TV? That's a tough question. They look great on TV. They look, you know, when you know, a CSI is there or any one of the, well, every movie ends up in Vegas. So every movie you see, Hangover, makes it look really cool. There's a lot of goofy things that happen that don't happen, like the suds that where they shoot the suds all over. They don't do that anymore. They did that for like one New Year's Eve. But are they as good now? Julia, you used to be, were you a host for gaming, or were you a host for clubs?
No, I was a VIP services agent at the Rio.
All right.
And then from there I went up into player development.
Okay.
Which is in the VIP. So I did, you know, we would have to welcome guests. We'd go to the airport,
yes,
welcome the high rollers and all that. But all right. I think they used to be great. I remember Club Rio was great. Light.
Mm-hmm. Studio 54.
Studio 54 was great.
Yeah.
I loved Light at Bellagio.
Mm-hmm.
Even Babies, remember that?
Oh, Babies, yeah.
That wasn't bad.
No.
But I don't know. Lately, it's... I wouldn't like it now. I think it, you know, takes you 45 minutes to get a drink, and it's just packed in, and I don't know. I don't think I would enjoy it as much. It's the bottle service thing wasn't a really big deal back when I went to clubs, and now you're nobody if you don't have a booth and a bottle service,
and
it's not fun.
There's really no premium alcohol. There wasn't back then. There isn't today. There's really no premium alcohol flowing. I mean, Grey Goose is not premium.
No.
You know, Belvedere is not premium. Kettle One, you know, that's everybody's favorite, Kettle One. They're not really premium, so it's not that special. Like Julia said, I made arrangements in our club, C2K, and all the other clubs. They were much better back then. 54 was always my favorite, but nowadays, I'm there for a different reason. I'm there, you know, and I see the club pre-opening, which is good and bad. You know, you see that all clubs are not quite as clean as they seem when you walk in and see all the lasers and lights and the DJ. But I don't think so. I think the TV does them justice. Mm-hmm. And Julia is absolutely right. And I remember, you know, John and I many a night, you know, trying to get people in and trying to reach club hosts, and it was a nightmare. We were powerless. There was nothing we could do about getting people in. I mean, I had a couple of doormen that would help me out, but then doormen became passé. I don't even know of a club now that really has doormen.
Really?
Not really. I mean, they have not that could help you. Mm-hmm. You know, mainly because they're so security conscious.
But that's the fun of it.
I know, wasn't it?
That was the fun. Yeah. Trying to get people in, trying to get to the front of the line.
Yeah.
Those are the good times. Yeah. I don't think I would have as much fun with, you know, Marquee. Yeah. I don't even know. That's the only one I know of right now.
Hakkasan, Marquee.
Hakkasan. Yeah. I tried to go to Hakkasan once. Yeah. It was maybe 5 years ago. My husband was an architect on that team, and it was awful. I stayed 20 minutes and walked out. Mm. What are you supposed to do? Just stand there? No, you can't talk. The music's so loud. You can't get a drink.
Right.
It wasn't that fun, unless I'm just old.
No, I don't think so. Well, yes, you are. I don't think so. I think it's the same experience for a young person. I think the experience is probably far more exciting for maybe first-time, second-time visitors, especially when they get past everything and they're able to get in for the first time. It is quite fun when you finally get in, and as long as you get completely hammered, you can have a great time. Especially if you do a New Year's or you do a special event and you get to see the Calvin Harris, Steve Aoki, Deadmau5, and all the other guys. But it's a problem. And of course, the what has always remained the same is that girls are, it's far easier for girls.
Yeah.
You got four plus girls, you're going to get treated way better than four little swinging swords.
Yeah.
And that'll never change. That's the same in all clubs.
Yeah. I didn't have a problem getting women in.
No.
I don't think you think, guy. I said, don't even ask me, man. I said, unless you're, I get women in, but I can't get, guys are, we're, you know, dime a dozen, so.
Yeah. But we're special, John.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that moves me to a tougher question. And this one is right at Julia. Was it hard then, and is it hard now, to be a woman in Las Vegas? And is it harder than any other city that you've experienced?
No.
No?
Not to me. I never had trouble.
You know, the current atmosphere, again, I'm not going to belabor that again, but it's a tough one. It's a tough atmosphere, and there's a lot of stuff going on, I didn't hear about any male-female problems, not really, when I was working there. And I was there 6+ years. You had mentioned that you had one issue, a long time ago.
Yeah.
When you were, much younger, and that was not a big deal.
No.
But John and I aren't able to answer that question, about when it's been, Now, is it hard to be single here?
Yes.
Yes. So it still is.
It still is.
Okay. Why so?
I think that hand in hand with being a party town,
mm-hmm.
People come and go. Is that
people
it?
Come yeah. and go. It's transient. And then people don't really settle into careers as much here, I feel like. It takes them a little bit longer. I think they eventually do. Like all three of us found our niches after we left the casino business. But I don't know. When you haven't settled on a career, then you're less of a family person, I think. And I don't know. I did have trouble here.
Mm-hmm.
I had to meet someone. You can't meet someone in a casino or a club.
Yeah, a lot of people come here to reinvent themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe they're running from something. They tend to have baggage. Then you find out later, and it's just like, well, is that somebody I really want to spend a lot of time with? I think that's
very difficult.
But related to this also, I used to get like, how can you raise a kid in Las Vegas? And I thought, well, I did. I mean, my son was, Gio was born in Las Vegas, and then we left. When we came back, he was in the fourth grade. There aren't stripper poles on every street corner.
Nope.
or bars or things like that. Otherwise, it's just like any other place, you choose. There's good schools and there's bad ones. Because I work in education, I knew which were the good ones. I made sure he went to those. So I don't see a problem raising kids. here in Las Vegas. Again, it's going to depend on where you're at. You're going to find, you know, good parts of town and bad. Las Vegas also has, if you look on crime statistics, it has a high crime rate, but that's even skewed because they only, what they do is they count how many crimes per capita. Well, they don't count the tourists because they don't live here. So they'll say that, you know, Las Vegas has, what, you know, a million people, whatever, and then there's so many crimes, therefore it's really high. But since a lot of those crimes happen on the Strip to people who don't actually live here, it inflates the crime rate.
Yeah. Yeah. But now I'll move from that to how Las Vegas is changing. I agree. I don't think it's it's challenging to live here sometimes, especially if you're in the industry. But when, like Julia said, if you're out of the industry, it's just a normal town. You just have a 2-mile piece of weirdness, and you know, and you avoid it like the plague. You know, and unfortunately, when family comes in, you got to go to the Strip. You got to do this. You got to do that. NY Guy 75 wrote, "Is Las Vegas catering to millennial and beyond?" I read an article regarding this, and you know, we're old school. I mean, Julie and I are Gen X. Mm-hmm. John, you're
baby.
I'm baby boomer.
You're a boomer. You're the ass end of baby boomer. Okay. Yeah. And so we're the forgotten. Well, you used to have all the money. Boomers used to, and that's where they
boomed.
That's where they calculated the market.
Yeah.
Gen X was quickly forgotten. We're sort of the forgotten generation. Millennials now are the ones that have discretionary funds, sort of. And see, the problem with Vegas is Vegas will always survive, but Vegas is slow to do things as it regards the changing of the guard generation. And I was reading this article, and they said there are three things that Vegas is trying to do to alter the way that it presents itself to millennials only, or Gen Y, as the case may be. They're redesigning the space. Now, we're used to it. You walk into a hotel, you walk into a casino, beautiful facade. Looks like, you know, for us, it was the Venetian, it was the Doge Palace, Campanile Tower, St. Mark's Square, and so on. Millennials don't care. And we all know when you walk into a casino, there's slot banks, they're straight, they're round. Then there's the crafts tables, there's the main gaming, and it all kind of looks the same. Well, apparently that's not attractive to millennials. Millennials want an entire sensory experience. They want sound, they want smells, they want a redesign of the structure, or they keep on going. They have very little money, and they make their decisions based on numerous but unknown factors. And they don't like complexity. And Vegas can't seem to do that, especially in the gaming area. And they're wanting something that I find very interesting. I wanted to get your guys' opinion on this. We've all gambled at one point or the other and had a good time or a bad time, depending. They want interactive, multiplayer, cooperative gaming. Meaning, I know, right? That's a mouthful. Meaning that, for example, John and Julie and I would go to a table. And they want the ones with the robo dealers. They want the hot chick throwing the cards on the computer screen, and they want what you do, Julia, and what you do, John, and what I do to all work together for our mutual benefit, which is 180 degrees away from what Las Vegas is. Las Vegas is, here's my $5. I would like to double my $5, and you either double it or lose it. It's you. But they want the group of millennials, all their little hipster pants and hats and beards, they want together to make money for the group. Now, do you think that is even possible?
Mm. No.
No.
Mm-mm. What do you think, John?
Basically what they want is, on a food level, they want communal tables.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, unless they would be okay with that if we put down $15.
Yeah.
Because they say, well, that's $5 a piece.
Right. Right.
They'll think of something like that. Because right. If there's one thing the town does well, is it will completely, and it has, you know, it has no a sense of, you know, of the past, right? I mean, they tore down the Sands.
I know.
And they had the Copa Room?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they don't know where it was at. You know, yeah. Well, where was it? I don't know. They used to say at the Venetian they were going to put up a plaque. It was here, but nobody knew where it was at. They don't care. They mm-mm. You know, they don't have I hate to say sentimentality, but they don't have any of that. They're like, you know, they want to cherish the past. It's like, we'll reinvent it. We'll tear it down. We'll just build something new that will make money. So, that you know, it went from gaming. Remember, they went into the family bit. Fortunately, that died out. It went back to gaming and then into the restaurants.
Yeah.
When I first time Celebrity I came chef. To Las Vegas was 1980. When I was 21, and they're really, I mean, the restaurants were shit. I mean, they had the buffets and things, and everybody was gambling. Nobody ate anything.
Yeah.
You know, and they were drunk anyway, so. But then, you know, then it became, they brought in the restaurants. But then people started thinking, and I think that was the experience that we found, one of the reasons why people were so annoyed is that they had the old Vegas in mind where things were really cheap.
Yeah.
They give everything away, and then they would come here, and they found out they don't give anything away anymore.
Because people used to come here and gamble, so yeah. They were really paying for it. I feel like we were one of the last groups. I kind of feel like we had the last of that really good experience, and we saw it die out. I mean, when I first started in the industry, I did things that would never be allowed now. I remember when I worked in player development, this high roller wanted to take the casino host I worked for, myself and another woman, to California for the weekend on his private jet. We all went. They took us in a limousine to the private airfield, took a jet, partied all weekend, came back. They would never allow that now. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah,
no. I mean, those were fun. It was fun back then. I remember I had a blast.
It was, you know, I can't call it dangerous, but it was what you think Las Vegas is. Going back to the question, is it as good as it looks on TV? That was as good. Julia just described exactly what happened so often.
Yep.
You know, and it's tough. Now, the third thing that they say that Las Vegas is not keeping up with the times, that group that wants a redesigned little gambling lounge, they want to all gamble together and mutually benefit, and they want real-time, interactive social media connectivity with everything that they do. They want the every win. So like I said, $5, give me my $5. They want $5 win, tweet, Facebook, Instagram, and then give the $5. So they want everything involved in this. They want everybody to know what's going on and how they did it and why and who's with them.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, an interesting thing again that I remembered in this article is that along with gaming, which is having a hard time dealing with this because there's a lot, like you said, wouldn't be allowed. There's a lot of stuff that's not allowed, you know, especially this tweeting thing. I don't even know how they would make a machine do that correctly, but because it could get hacked at that point. But one thing along with gaming, millennials are passing by to get to the Momofuku or whatever restaurant they go to.
Mm-hmm.
They are not going to strip clubs. And why? Why are they not going to? Because they don't have any money, but why?
Because they have no money, yeah. I don't know why.
It's inappropriate. Now it's inappropriate.
Strip clubs, to go to a strip club?
Yes. Julia and John and I existed in a time where strip clubs were kind of shows. I mean, it was the good ones were nice and interesting. And then all three of us progressed in a time where it was not great that a woman went in there, and then suddenly it was okay. Couples were great, you know, women were great. You didn't have to have an escort anymore. You just went in and enjoyed the strip club. Now, you know, and then that progressed to women enjoying the strip club dancers.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you could go in and watch, have fun, but then the girls wouldn't dance for women.
Yeah, right.
And then it progressed to the dancing for women. Now it's inappropriate. Strip clubs are dying. They're literally dying because everybody's embarrassed and it's inappropriate and objectifying women. I don't know.
Well, the OGs have guys too.
Right? OG had guys.
Oh, yeah.
They had guys.
Yeah. They did.
Not anymore. Well, OG's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah, yeah, and they closed.
Yeah. Oh, our VIP passes are dead.
They're dead.
Julia, what do you think? Do you think Las Vegas should be still the place where strip clubs exist?
Yes.
You do?
I like my Vegas a little bit seedier.
I do, too.
I do.
Yeah.
I think it's supposed to be the adult playground. That's what it's supposed to be. That's what it was meant to be.
Yeah.
And it's just everything's so homogenized now, and everything's just like everything else, and we have to be able to, like you said, tweet it and Facebook it. It just, the mystique is gone.
And I find that so interesting that literally the social connectivity that they're asking for is 180 degrees. It's polarized from what happens here stays here. I just find that really interesting that now they want everybody to know. But they've whitewashed it. Mm-hmm. And after that, now they want you to know. It's like, well, yeah, I ate here and I played $5 and nothing bad happened. Tweet.
Yeah.
You know. You're
as
right.
If anybody really wants to know. Yeah. I mean, so often I see those, you know, I've got Facebook and I almost never post anything. But someone else say, oh, you know, I'm at IHOP. Good for you. Now, why are you letting everybody know, you know?
And Facebook, I know people on Facebook and they'll post, you know, something they're doing to make themselves look good.
Right.
It's like if your life does not even remotely resemble what you're making it out to be,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're doing this to make people think a certain thing about you. It's not even true. I just think it just takes the mystique out of Vegas for sure.
I do too. The only thing I can say, and this is all the way back to the first question, what is it like to live in Las Vegas? Truly what it's like to live in Las Vegas is to see something, see a town, it will change with whatever times is required of it, and then it'll snap back. It'll go back to the beginning, to zero, and then see what happens. It'll be here when we're all gone. It'll be here when the millennials are gone. And it's a learning town where it'll never, I don't think it'll ever die. It'll never, you know, you'll never see the tumbleweeds rolling through and, you know, all the typical zombie movies. They love to destroy Vegas. It'll never happen. You know, and I still find it to be an extremely safe town. I think what's the recent happenings, I think that was an anomaly. We've been on the terrorist list forever since we had terrorists. But it's a great town, and I think Julia's right. I don't like it now. It's turned into something we, you know, the panel here, don't like. I think, well, Julia hit it right on the head. There is no mystique anymore, and therefore I think it's not fun. You know, it doesn't. You know, we're the one place where it should be over the top.
It should be. Yeah. It really should be. I've had some amazing times here. It was, you know, when I was, there's no better place to party. I got my party out.
That's right.
I mean, it was fun.
Julia was wild, John.
I did.
I can't imagine.
She was. I mean, look at her now. She's a beautiful woman, obviously a corporate, and she was wild.
Back then.
Rarely had clothes on.
Well.
Well, it does get hot here. That's something else people have to get used to, the heat in the summer.
I was scantily clad.
Now, I'll bring up a couple of controversial topics. I just,
sure.
Yeah, just some quick answers. We've talked about the big one, you know, the strip clubs. That was huge to me. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of the industry now of marijuana? What do you do? Now, that's new to us.
Mm-hmm.
I got asked for weed every once in a while at the desk. And I was just, it was some lame-o. And I said, ask a cab driver. And they knew. And you still ask a cab driver because the dispensaries are too expensive. But what do you think of the industry in Las Vegas? Because it's here. It's not coming. It's here.
Yeah, it's here.
Yeah. Positive, negative?
I'm kind of.
Is it here to stay?
Indifferent to positive. So I just think that. You know, the whole legalization of marijuana thing, I think it does push out the criminal element because, you know, people go to a reputable place and buy it and, you know, they don't have to, I don't know. I think that part is good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care much about marijuana. I have to be honest.
Yeah.
What about you, John?
Well, I haven't been to a dispensary yet. I probably go sometime once things kind of die down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've known a lot of drunks. I've known a lot of stoners in my life. I prefer to hang out with stoners just because I know some people, when they get drunk, they can get violent. I've not known anybody, any of my people that I know who are stoners, that get violent. I mean, they just kind of lay there and, you know, eat whatever, pass the potato chips, you know. let's watch old Monty Python shows, kind of like we did back in the 70s. I don't have an issue with that. It does take the. And if you ask most police agencies, they'll say the same thing. Mm-hmm. They would rather, you know, they don't really, you know, come on, it's pretty minor.
I'd rather them focus on, you know, important things. Let's focus on murders and rapes and conspiracy. Let's not worry about the guy smoking a joint.
Yeah, they're not really bothering anybody.
No.
Okay. What do you guys think now? We haven't talked about this in a long time, But we've taken a few more steps forward, and again, it's here. They're coming. What do you guys think about the Raiders? You think it's a good thing for the town, a bad thing for the town?
You know, I'm kind of excited. I'm seeing hockey now. I'm seeing, football coming. Mm-hmm. And I heard that we're getting soccer. We're getting a
MLS team.
MLS, so it's like a lower division.
It's a lower.
Oh, is it like a farm division? Okay.
Yeah, I guess.
All right.
I don't have a problem with it. I'm not a football fan. I don't watch on Sundays. I never will. Mm-hmm. I'm thankful my husband does because he can go watch and then I can write. It gives me some privacy.
Yeah, right.
So he cares more about it than I do. But I think it's great. I don't know about the Raiders. I feel like that crowd might be a little bit rougher. I don't know, but
it is.
Is it?
It's my team. I love the Raiders. Always
you
have.
Do.
I didn't want them to come here, but it's a rough crowd.
They're supposed to be rough.
Raiders represented that. You know, they were Oakland across the board, and I feel sorry for the Bay Area. They're sad. They're so mad at the Raiders right now.
Well, it's twice now that they've left. So yeah. I mean, I should tell you about that organization. And the day will come, maybe 20, 30 years from now when their lease is up, that they're going to be looking for, hey, I'll ditch Las Vegas in a second if I can get a better deal somewhere.
Yeah.
So they have that history. And I'm from the Bay Area. I don't want they should stay in Oakland, you know. You say that the hockey team here, I think that was fine. It was an expansion team. The MGM owned and paid for the T-Mobile. They have a lot of events that go on besides hockey, and they play, 40 games a season? They're a little more than that, 41 games, I think. There's an 82-game hockey season.
Right.
But the Raiders are, 10 games and a big stadium, and you're not going to get too many events in a big football stadium, unlike the T-Mobile. You know, they're not very – Metallica went on a stadium tour this year. They skipped Las Vegas. It really wasn't a place for them to play. But other than that, it's going to sit empty for most of
That's
the time.
That's true.
And it's going to still have upkeep. And because, when the 49ers played at Candlestick, I worked at Candlestick, I hawked beer. And I remember just in 2 weeks how shabby the place got just in between home games, And then, of course, they had the Giants, though. They had a baseball team. But the thing that gets me now is a hockey team is the price of the tickets. I was looking, I think I'll go to a game, because you can't watch them on local TV here. They're not on the channels that I get, so I can't watch them. So I said, I'm a Sharks fan, so I'll maybe when the Sharks play. Well, to get to the seats in the upper deck, like on the top, which you really don't want to see a hockey game up there, they're $125 each.
Whew.
If you want to get down closer to the lower area, they're $325.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to get on the glass, they're looking at about $650.
Wow.
That's single game.
That's a single game.
That's not a season at all.
Yes, that's during the regular season. It's not like seventh game of the Stanley Cup. And I thought, $650, I thought, gee, I got VIP tickets at Las Rages, which was 2 days, not 2 hours.
Right.
And, I paid a lot less than that for those.
That's a little pricey.
Yeah, that's a bit pricey.
All right, last question. I'm going to put you guys on the spot. What is gone in Las Vegas that you wish would return?
Gone that I wish would return.
Yeah, something you enjoyed or something in the past that you never saw but you wish would come back so you can experience it. What is no longer in Las Vegas and you wish would come back?
Oh, I think the showgirl shows.
Yeah, you too?
The Mob Rules. I mean,
yes.
I had a friend who was a bellman at the Riv in the 60s, and he retired, I think, in 2000. And he was even complaining at that time about the corporatization of it. Mm-hmm. And it's, of course, gotten a lot worse. And he said he made more money as a bellman in 1965 than he did in 1995. He said, when the mob ran it, all they cared about was the casino. If you had your own little side scams or whatever it was, you're running stuff, fine, go ahead, make as much money as you can. They didn't nickel and dime you and want a cut of everything you did. They only cared about the casino. So he said things were so much better back then. And I think that's what people wanted. That's when they come here. That's what they're really disappointed at. They took it out on us. The fact that, what do you mean nothing's free here? Or the buffet's $39.95 at that time and it's gone up $10.
Right.
What happened to the $1.95? That's dead and buried.
But do you think that happened because the public changed? Like the visitor, the demographic that came here changed? Because when you think about it, they had no money to game. So we're not going to give you anything for free if you're not gaming.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think the discretionary funds that people had slowly went away for one reason or another, crashes here and there. But we lost the loss leader items mm-hmm. and never got them back. The buffet being one of them, obviously. Yeah.
Well, we experienced this. Remember, we were doing all right. Yeah. We had those commissions, and then they took, 90%?
Yeah, and we still did okay. That was our biggest source of income.
We did okay, but, I mean, what was wrong? Honestly, in the grand scheme of things, gaming makes so much money. Was it really important to have our $200,000 that was split between 40 people? Yeah. Or, you know what I mean?
You know, it's
why do they do that? Why do they have to keep doing that? They're doing it to Valet now. Yeah. They're doing it to Bellman.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand. That's all changed. I just don't think it's...
Well, we've talked about it earlier. Concierge, there's no more specialness to it. It's literally just a place to buy tickets, you know. And now they're hiring. They're outsourcing. You know, concierge now are outsourced ticket sales people. Sort of like Ticketmaster, not Ticketmaster, right. But some just like that. So, yeah. So, I agree with you. I'll add also that I never saw them, but my mother and father came to Vegas during the time of the Rat Pack. Mm-hmm. And to talk about Lost Leader, you can go see Frank and Sammy and Dean for free in the lounge. You didn't even have to get in the lounge. You just sit down, and there they were.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, at the Sands, and it was an amazing place. I never saw it. I wish I could somehow see it. I see it on rare videos, you know, but I think that would have been great. I can't even imagine what's coming for Vegas.
That's another thing that I miss is the maitre d' seating.
Oh, yeah.
It's between you and the maitre d'. It depends on where do you want to sit. There's not a bad seat in the place.
Yeah.
But if you want to get right up there in the front there.
You give the guy a 20.
Yeah. You have to give the guy a 20.
And with the ruffled tuxedo shirt.
Yes.
Yeah. And I told you this earlier, I miss the coins. I miss the sound. Ching, 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 ching. Yeah, That's what I knew.
I always knew as a kid, when somebody came back and gave me silver dollar or 50 cent piece, that they'd been to either Reno or Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Because that was it. That's what went in the slot machines. And they would save their coins to go gamble. It was kind of a fun thing to do.
Right, you know? Right. Well, I have a couple of Area 52 things I thought were pretty cool in keeping. One of the questions I had is, what is the population of Vegas? As of third quarter of 2016, we have 632,912 people.
Hmm.
Yes. Honestly, I thought it was more.
I thought it was over a million.
I think they count the valley. You know, like Henderson is 300,000, think, now. So you include that.
So that does not include Henderson, Township of Summerlin, North Las Vegas. That doesn't include. So, I mean, we're probably thinking of that.
Yeah.
But 632,000, almost 633. Now, the interesting one I thought of to talk about, or not talk about, but here, the original lion that was in front of the MGM Grand, it was sort of an Art Deco style. It was a lion whose mouth was open. And you would walk through his mouth to get into the casino right off Las Vegas Boulevard. Well, there were two. It was taken down, in Las Vegas terms, almost immediately. It was taking up. The first reason was it was taking up really prime real estate for more gaming machines. That's always the thought process. But more importantly, it was found to be in many of the Asian cultures tremendously bad luck to walk into a line or be in exposed to a line in that way. And therefore, they redesigned it, truly redesigned it, and then had a statue commissioned of an entire full lion that now is out front. And there's a lot of people that don't know that.
Oh, yeah. I remember that original deal.
Yeah. It was goofy looking. It was strange.
It was bad.
Yeah.
It was poorly done, but... Yeah.
But there's a lot of little tidbits about Vegas that I'm finding that I'm remembering after all those years. Now, how many years were you at the Venetian? Julia.
Oh, man. Hold on. I have to count them. I think I was there in 90. Hold on.
99 is when they opened.
99.
Yeah.
I think I was.
You were there 6 months after.
I was there in 99.
Yeah. Yep. You were.
But it was after the opening.
End, yeah. The end of 99.
And I quit in 2003.
Okay.
So what is that? Four years.
John.
I think I was there three because I finally had enough in 2002. That's when I went back to grad school. So I was here 3 years.
But don't you guys remember? Don't you sometimes miss? I mean, we had some good times. Think of us standing up there at 10 o'clock at night.
Tapping on all the guests.
Just absolutely making fun of everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
People would walk up. They'd walk up and be like,
And I remember one time, and I said, you were there, Julia, and you looked at me and goes, that lady just farted. And I said, how do you know? Because she had a dress on, and she was talking to somebody, and she grabs the hem of it and starts waving it
back
and
forth. Yeah, she did.
Yeah. So I said, oh, I just learned something. I never thought of that, because I've never worn a dress.
Do you remember Anna Nicole Smith?
Yes.
Was that you, or is that you, Jamie, when she came out of the restroom? It was when the desk was on the other side.
Yeah.
The better place, in my opinion. And she came out of the restroom, and she had smeared her lipstick like this. And she was falling drunk, put her hand on the desk, falling on the desk.
I remember the story. I can't remember if I was there for it.
I don't think
I was there for that one.
Didn't remember.
She was a wreck from the beginning.
Oh, man. Yeah. Poor thing. That lipstick was just, boom, bright red.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I remember once when we had our telecom in the back of the front desk. And I go in there, and then Jamie said, really, just kind of, you know, he just said, be careful when you go out not to trip over the Muslim woman praying. And I thought, what? And I opened the door because I was going out. And sure enough, there was one right in front of the women's room.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
She had set down her prayer mat and was praying. I guess, so, you know, we would get that often. What time is sundown?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can't really tell when you're in the hotel. So yeah. I guess she figured, oh, shit.
Right here.
I got to do it right here. And which way's, you know, which direction is Mecca? I guess it's that way. And it was less like, I almost took that, like, yeah, I opened the door and she was like, we just didn't move. And okay, well.
Yeah.
You were right.
Yeah. And then at the end of my tenure, so to speak, of the Venetian, they built a prayer room.
Oh.
They finally did. Nowhere near the bathroom, thankfully. But, well, guys, thank you for being here. John, always a pleasure seeing you. Julia, you too.
Thanks.
Now, Julia, of course, is our resident author.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find her works every day on my phone, apparently. My Amazon app is locked onto Julia's book and Woven Realms. Now, Julia, go ahead and plug everything you want to plug. What do you got?
So Woven Realms, Woven Quests, and Barren Waters. And then I'll have I think I'm going to do a Twitter polling of my new cover design.
Mm-hmm.
In about 5 weeks, I'm thinking it'll be 5 weeks.
Okay.
It'll be a book called Carved in Stone. And so I'm going to take all of the designer submissions, narrow it down to maybe like my top 5 to 7, put it publicly for Twitter to decide on, and I'll send it to family and friends.
Okay.
And so anyway, check it out. Barren Waters is definitely, for me, my bestseller, not a bestseller for me, my bestseller. But so hopefully you guys will check it out.
And listeners can find you, all of this information at juliashoup.com. That's SHUPE, juliashoup.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But again, thank you guys for being here. For us, you can find us at thepodbaydoor.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, all of the major podcasting apps. And please check in with us on our WordPress site, where you can see follow-up articles and all the clickable and downloadable links for everything we talked about, especially for the Vegas shows. And you can find that at thepodbaydoor.wordpress.com, or hit the big W at thepodbaydoor.com. And check in with us on our YouTube channel as well. It's the Pod Bay Door podcast at YouTube, and you can see all of the panelists when they visit here. Appreciate it, and we will see you next Tuesday. Thanks to everyone listening and watching. You can catch the Pod Bay Door on the Podbean app or any of your favorite podcast apps, including iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, and Stitcher Radio. You can watch the show on our YouTube channel at the Pod Bay Door Podcast. Please download, like, and subscribe. Our social connectivity screen is coming up. Check in with us on Facebook, Twitter, and WordPress. The Pod Bay Door is closed and talent is out. Hey, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning into the show. We would love to hear your show suggestions and comments. If you're watching on our YouTube channel, please click to subscribe. You can also connect with us on Facebook using @PBDPodcast, on Twitter using @TPBDPodcast, and on WordPress at thepodbaydoor.wordpress.com.